exciting episode of the League of Mediocre Gentlemen. This is the spring and winter anime review episode. With me, as always, for anything anime is my co-host, Ian Shaw.
Why wouldn't you say winter and then spring?
Because I actually went right into spring and I was like, whoa, there's a whole other season you're forgetting. And I should have just said, honestly, welcome to the first half of the year of anime. That probably would have been better, but I was staring at spring.
But spring. It's okay, because that's why we are called the League of Mediocre Gentlemen podcast, because if you had done it the way that you originally wanted to do it, then we would have been the League of Above Average Gentlemen podcast.
Ooh, that would be the next show. Whenever we finally make it big, we'll change it to Above Average.
Marginally above replacement level.
Oh, it's even better. It might include the baseball stuff.
And we'll call it Marl.
That's... Why did we have that as a name in the listing of things when we were kicking around ideas?
Jeez, that sounds even wordier than the one we have.
I know. But at least then it wouldn't sound like we're exclusive to only male co-hosts, as Diana pointed out when she jumped into the show the first time.
Oh, fair.
All right, Ian. So we're going to be talking about anime. Mostly, obviously, it's impossible for both of us with full-time jobs and not a career in YouTube or podcasting to be able to watch all the anime that came out through winter and spring. But we did watch quite a bit, and maybe some stuff that actually didn't come out during winter or spring because, you know, we get curious and we want to see, you know, a show that somebody's talking about somewhere. And one thing leads to another, and suddenly I binge-watch a show. So we're going to kind of dive right into it, but first I just wanted to kind of start off with a little light stuff. I just wanted to mention I recently got into reading a light novel series, and it is the novel series for the Grimgar of Fantasy and Ash.
Yep, which we both watched the season that came out of anime, and we'll never see another season of it. But
Probably not, because apparently the guy who was running the studio had some sort of mental breakdown, and the studio doesn't really exist anymore.
Jeez,
so
that's one way to kill your anime.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't know what happened. I don't know the full story or anything, but yeah, it's sad. I of course never say never in terms of anime. It's not that another studio couldn't come along and pick it up. It's just, you know, it's not going to be anytime soon.
Yeah, seems unlikely at this point. Well, that's kind of a shame because I kind of liked it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I watched it multiple times, and I liked it enough that I decided to check out the light novels because people would not stop posting spoilers in places that I did not expect to see spoilers. So I decided to, you know, rip the band-aid off. We'll see. I've never actually read a light novel series. I do have the first three seasons, I guess you could call them. The light novel versions of the Monogatari series in a very lovely little box set that I've been slowly kind of going through as well. But those are different in a weird way. So I've never actually sat down and looked at a light novel before. I just kind of knew what it was from, you know, what people said online. But it's a weird, like, the best way I could describe this for an English audience is that it's like a young adult novel. That's the quality to kind of expect from light novels. And in the one for Grimgar, I don't know if they all have this, because it certainly Monogatari does not have this, but like in Grimgar, there actually are illustrations occasionally. Like, you'll turn and you'll see like a random like one page spread of some pictures of the artists, of the characters and stuff for the certain scene you're reading about. But other than that, it's almost all entirely words. There's no like manga or comic book kind of looking design on it. But as for the quality of Grimgar, so I want to love this series, and I do think that there's a lot of good in these, because the author, Ayo Jayumanji?
I am 100% sure that that is not correct.
Jimon.
Please stop.
The first word is AO, and then the next one, JYUMONJI. So if you're looking to Google his name, that's how it's spelled. Don't take my pronunciation at all to heart. So He is really, really good at one thing particularly, and that's fight scenes. Like, there's a reason why the show, I think, had so good, like, weight behind all of their fight scenes. And I think it's because of the fact that, in terms of description, he does write a really good fight scene. Like, it's really easy to tell what's going on, and it's smartly written, where the characters are using their environment around them, they're using what they've learned, and like, it just, it flows really well. The problem is the show did a much better job in not the fight scenes as well. And he gets, like, the main character is so wordy when he's doing his internal monologue. And he does it so often that I have to choke him. Because, there's, no communication between him and his teammates as much as the show had. And maybe because the show kind of just, like, cut through all that, like, fat. But, like, I wish... There are times where I wish he would just, like, have a little bit more interaction with characters, because we don't get a lot of the stuff about what the other characters are doing very often. I think it was book 4, where all of a sudden in the beginning you got pretty much everyone but Haruhiro as their perspective. And that was super cool because it was nice to sort of see characters dealing with stuff on their own without hearing Haruhiro's weird, like... Like, he's so wishy-washy, and he's so, like, he berates himself so often. Like, he just doesn't think he's that good of a leader.
And it does get annoying after a time.
It gets super annoying. Shiharu, the really quiet girl, she's gotten really snarky, and I enjoy it. I just wish there was more of her in the book. And she finally sits down with Haruhiro and tells him, like, hey, we all think you're, like, the best leader we could have ever had. And, like... We are really, really lucky to have someone who is as cautious as you are to lead us. So stop berating yourself so much. Like, it feels like you don't appreciate yourself when clearly we all think that you're the best. And he still doesn't get it. He thinks that she's, like, messing with him. I'm like, no, oh my God, you idiot. This is...
Yeah.
Like, does she ever come across as someone who, like...
And there's a line, like, that... And, like, just like with your real friends, like, there's a fine line with... people who are, like, obviously talented at something, there's, like, a fine line between humility and just, like, annoyingly obtuse. And because it starts to come off as disingenuous when people are like that. It's not likable.
It's kind of reaching that. Like, it definitely seems like he's genuinely thinking he's below mediocre level. Like, he thinks that he's just not that great. And he constantly, through the book, keeps comparing himself to Monito, their previous leader. And every time they make a mistake, he always thinks that it's on him, that, like, it's not that, you know, there's some things that you just can't prepare for. He thinks that he should have been able to be, like, prepared for it. Which, you know, it's a good quality to have, but you gotta ease up at some point. Like, I'm in book 7, and he's still doing this stuff. And I'm like, God, this is the slowest character arc I've ever seen. Because it doesn't feel like anything is moving at all in terms of his development. Like, the plot's not bad. I'm enjoying it. In fact, without saying too much in spoiler territories, they stumble into another world.
Oh, God. It's an isekai inside an isekai.
I know. It's even better than that. So they first they go through, like, a cave, and they discover this world where the sun never sets. It's, like, constantly in this weird afternoon sort of light, like a weird... like a twilight or whatever kind of looking area. And then they go in one step further because they have to escape some, like, creatures. And it's a world that never has light. It's, like, constantly dark. And I have to say that this part, like, in terms of describing the environment, the author actually went above and beyond his usual, like, you know, bare bones descriptions. He actually is doing a really good job describing stuff, despite the fact that it's funny because it's all night and you can't see that much at night. So, like, now he chooses to describe things. It's a weird beast, and it's one of those, like, I think I could only say this for the movie Stardust, and now for this, where somehow the movie or the TV show was the better version of it. It doesn't happen often, but I find it in random places, and this is one of those times where I just think the anime was able to do it a little bit better because they chose to not focus on Haruhiro so much, and they opened it up a little bit more. And just, like, Haruhiro may still be in the anime as, like, wishy-washy, and, you know, you hear his internal thoughts, but the internal thoughts don't feel as repeaty as they do in the book. So that's where I'm at. I ended up buying like a whole series of them. So I've got up to book 9 that I can read right now. I don't know if I'll keep buying more. We'll see. But I think they're up to 15 now, but it gets weird when it gets to the higher numbers. The author starts having like a 14 plus or something as like a companion. I don't know what's going on with that. I haven't gotten that far to kind of start figuring things out, but yeah, it's an interesting series, and I don't know if I can 100% recommend it. I honestly think that from what I've read of the Monogatari series, that author does a way better job at just like having fun with the written language. And I think that is actually something I could easily recommend. It's going to be hard to recommend Grimgar unless you are a huge fan of the series of the anime show and just want to find out what happens.
That's fair. So you people looking to get into light novels, and you are, if you have that very specific taste, then this one is for you.
Definitely. And I think on Amazon, which is where I got it, a lot of the light novel volumes, because they're all divided up as like volume 1 and 2, for those who don't know, are the ones that the anime did. After that, volume 3, 4, and 5, they're all new stuff. I recommend starting on volume 2, just skipping volume 1 if you've seen the anime, because it pretty much covers everything the anime did. The only thing different in volume 2 is there is this interesting orc fight that there's like a siege on the city in the very beginning that was not in the anime. And it's actually really cool to read that because it's not about Haruhiro's party. He's following Genji and his holy crap, they're more powerful than everyone party, and just trying to kind of survive during this fight. And it's actually really cool to see him ducking and dodging and, you know, jumping through rooms and buildings to try to get away from the orcs and stuff. So anyway, yeah, recommend it if you want to read more. Recommend it if you like isekai, because this is still probably one of the best isekais out there.
Wow.
I mean, the bar is not exactly high.
Rhea Slime has something to say about that.
The problem
we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. But yeah, so just if you're curious, what I was going to say is Amazon, they're all on Amazon to buy, both on the Kindle and physical. Obviously, the Kindle will be cheaper, but the physicals, there was occasionally a couple times where I found like random coupons that Amazon just gives out that you could take like $3 or $2 off of the physical copies. So if you're someone like me who just enjoys having the physical pages, Amazon has some pretty sweet deals to kind of get them. So not to plug Amazon.
We're not getting paid. We are not getting paid. But Amazon, if you want to pay us, feel free.
I will accept any kind of a check to... We'll talk about it. it's hard to find these books in bookstores. It's hard to find these books, especially in used bookstores. So just... there are places on Amazon that make it really cheap. They're like $5 normally, and then Amazon might make it like $3. Cool. Depending. So, yeah, not too expensive. Anyway, yeah, so...
let's get to the anime part of the anime episode.
Much like the Grimgar Fantasy of Ash, the anime is the better part that we're going to be talking about today. So, all right, Ian. So
first half.
What are your overall thoughts?
I think much like many of my cross-country races, it had a promising start and then has stumbled and gotten difficult. but I'm hoping for a second half surge.
Yeah, same here. I coming out of fall 2018, man, what a dip in quality. There isn't a whole wave of just garbage. It just felt that there was a lot less, and the ones that were good just didn't feel like as good as just came out of. This was a splash of cold water.
I thought winter was good. I really thought that there was a lot in winter. I think that spring has been a letdown. Because I think that the easiest way for me to like articulate that in a way everyone understands is that in during spring, I was able to keep up with pretty much everything that I wanted to watch, which is an absolute first. So I'm like, that I think on its own is telling that there were just fewer shows in the spring that I was interested in.
Yeah, I could count not even on one hand the shows that I watched in the spring, and then in the winter, while I didn't like it at much, like a lot of people were saying, oh, it might be even better than the fall. Hold your horses. It was still not that bad, though. It ended up being fairly good with a lot of the shows out there coming out. So, yeah, I would say the same thing. Winter is far superior than what we got in spring.
Yeah. So do we want to just work our way through?
Yeah, sure. So first, let's just rip this Band-Aid right off. Neither of us watched Attack on Titan Season 3.
So if you want to know more about Attack on Titan Season 3, I'm sure there are plenty of podcasts that talk about it. But like Richard and I, correct me if I'm wrong, but you also kind of like you watched the first season as well and got kind of like after that. Yep. Like I watched the first season and then never watched again just because it didn't hold my interest. But
same here. I watched the first season and then I watched the first episode of the second season. And my issue was with Attack on Titan. The first season was fine. It actually like super hype, but it kind of just got distracted from itself almost immediately. I mean, now that it's been a running joke of what the hell's in Aaron's basement, which I guess they discovered already in season 2 or 3. But like season 1, they were headstrong going to that basement, and then no, let's deal with this thing instead and go right back to the Capitol.
Yeah. Well, it also weird. It also had the habit of creating more and more questions without answering any of the ones that came before, which is fine to an extent, but then it gets annoying. And it also starts to make me wonder if the anime knows where it's going. So
that was awesome.
Yeah. So like, I mean, a mystery anime is great. I like mystery anime. I like mysteries and suspense and thrillers. Those are awesome. But if you're going to continue to ask new questions, you do have to drip feed us information so that we are satisfied as well as teased. And I definitely felt, at least in the first season of Attack on Titan, that we kept getting more and more information we didn't know. And then nothing that came before was addressed. And that was very irritating.
Yeah, especially when you have a character suddenly turn into a Titan and, like, you have another character revealed as a Titan person and you're just sort of, like, you're left with these questions that you think you're going to get answers for, and instead they just kind of keep distracting you to the point where, yeah, like you said, do they even have an answer for us? Like, that was where I was starting to get at the end there. But what really put the nail in the coffin for me, that might be an exaggeration. I'm not saying that I might never go back to this show, because there's been enough hype now that I'm thinking, well, maybe I should give it a chance. But for me, when I started season 2, and it focused in on this guy, who was like some guy who I don't think we had met before the season, but I could be wrong. It had been a long time since I've seen season 1, and they made him out to be this crazy good ranger guy, and he gets captured by these Titans, and one of the Titans talks to him, and then like it just goes on to this like exaggeratedly long scene of him getting eaten alive by a Titan. And I was like, all right, that's enough. I'm not someone who says like, oh, you know, violence is, oh, I can't keep watching this. But I sort of was like, I don't need this to continue the plot. It just feels like filler because you didn't want to put more into this episode. And it's kind of extremely unnecessary. Like it just either it's filler or you guys really get a kick out of like this gruesome thing. And either way, it's not for me. And so that's where I was sort of like, I'm going to wait on season 2. And I now season 3 and I still haven't come back. So
yeah. So you want to start on one of the shows that we both did watch?
Yes. So do you want to start on the ones that continue to out from?
Yeah, let's knock those out, and then we'll go into the new content.
Because
yeah,
I think those will be quicker. So the ones from the fall, that time I got reincarnated as a slime, Run with the Wind, I think, correct me if I'm wrong.
Alicization, I think so.
Alicization, I think that came out from the fall as well. And
I think those are the only ones, I think.
I don't remember if Boogie Pop and the others came out in the fall. That might have been a really late fall ad, like near the end, because Boogie Pop and the others had 18 episodes instead of like 24. So it's kind of confusing, and I kind of started watching it in the middle, so I'm not sure when it actually started. So we'll put an asterisk next to that one. But we also kind of talked about that show a lot in the disjointed plot lines episode. So let's focus on Sword Art, Run with the Wind. By the time I got reincarnated as a slime.
Those are the three. I've only seen episodes of two of these, so I actually did not get around to Alicization. You watched it. How do you not know?
My fun
proposition for when we talk about SAO is that I'm going to talk about Gun Gale Online Alternative, whatever the hell name that is, because I watched that. And I know it didn't come out this season or this year, but fuck you, listener. I enjoyed it. So.
Well, yeah, we do have a thing for enemies that we watched. So that is,
but do you want to start with Slime, since we both watched all of that?
Yeah. Yes, let's start with Slime. So, Slime ended, or, you know...
The season ended, yeah.
The season ended, thank you. Remains to be seen. We'll get a second season. I have not heard anything, but I haven't exactly been listening super carefully. But what... How did you like how it ended?
It definitely seemed like a situation where they ended it that way because it was where they were at the story as far as the light novel was, and they didn't pace it properly to have a more climactic ending. That's how it felt. But like, they were like, well, we need to get this in, or like, we, you know, they probably could have ended it with the fight against the Leviathan, but they didn't pace it properly to do that, or they didn't feel that they wanted to like drag it out. So, but they probably wanted to address this aspect of the story before going on to any other kind of climactic sort of, you know, I don't know. I haven't read the light novel, but that's just that's my guess. So like, it ended in kind of a weird, so you kind of reminded me of the ending of season 3 of Hiroaka, because it ended sort of like as a table setter, but not as like a climax. So just sort of like teasing things to come and like teasing like mystery elements for these kids and like the significance later in the story, but like, you know, answering one or two questions, but nothing like, no big anime clash or anything, which whatever, that's fine. I wasn't like heartbroken about it because the rest of the season was so good. And like the show was never really about huge battles and stuff. It was more about like subverting your expectations to where Rimuru ends up like befriending most of the monsters he fights. So I mean, I didn't hate it, but it did feel like the last three or four episodes were a pretty big shift in just the style of the show. And I mean, I was okay with it, but I get where it was a little jarring.
Yeah, so I'm kind of the same. I don't need a climactic battle to end the show with. So if you don't end it that way, it's fine. But for me, my problem was more of, it just felt like for a lot of the episodes in the second half of Slime, it just, this giant like setup of a setup of a setup to another setup to another setup to another setup, and it never felt like I had a payoff. Even the Leviathan fight felt a little weird to me because it was sort of like, oh, these like minions of the demon lord guy are like messing around with things, and set up. And I was just like, oh my god, can we get like something that shows that we're moving in a direction? Like, I enjoyed his like befriending monster stuff because it very much was a kind of subversion to what you would expect. But at a certain point, I go, well, then what are we working here for? Because if this is City Builder, I can go play a City Builder game, and then, like, I'll just call myself Rimuru, and that'll be fine. But, like, are we heading in a direction? Because they killed off the main girl in the title screen, who they will...
Oh, my God, yes! She's in, like, both openings. She's in... I think that if you... And I'd love to see somebody actually do this. Somebody needs to go... And so she's in the openings for both openings for the show. I want someone to count the seconds of screen time in those openings, multiply them by the number of episodes, add that all together, that number. And I bet that number of screen time in openings alone is greater than the number of seconds of screen time that she got in the actual content of the show.
Oh my God. probably yes, because, and that's including the weird, like, fortune teller who hyped her up to being something, only for the show to get rid of her in two episodes. Like, oh, I was so, I was like, oh, well, clearly
she's and spoilers, we're going to get into spoilers real quick here, because it's kind of...
I'll have to insert a spoiler for the last, I think, the last or second to last episode.
So did you get the impression that, that one of the girls of the kids at the end of the season is like the reincarnation of that character? Because that's the impression I got.
Either that, I don't know if I came to that conclusion, but definitely I thought she was like the kid of her or something. Like she, like
it
she
felt like there was out. There was heavy allusion that she is somehow either connected or that she's the actual physical reincarnation of that character, which is which is interesting. I don't know where you go with that, but
yeah, that's the problem, because the show just kept setting things, like it always does this. It's one of the masters of cliffhangers, where it just keeps throwing another cliff for you to hang off of and wait for. And when you kind of progress from that cliff, you go to another.
I really enjoyed the show.
I think it's better as a binge. I think it's a better as a binge, because as a weekly show, and I'm probably going to say this again for like One Punch Man as we get to it, but like, man, I should have just waited for this to conclude, because I am getting more annoyed by the ending of each episode than I would be if I had just gone straight through the whole show in one sitting.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought like it was a wholesome take on the isekai genre, which, you know, is not a particularly hot take. Other people have said that. And it seems to be working towards world peace and stuff like that. So I like Rimuru as a character. He's a good example of a static arc kind of character. Yeah. So, because he.
People, look up a video on YouTube.
Yes, check it out. Super duper, check it out. It's a really good.
You do not always need to have an arc, but it's very clear that he's
yes, the monsters that he encounters, the people he encounters, he challenges their views of themselves, of where they fit in society and how they can work together towards a shared goal. Because Rimuru doesn't really change at all. Like, he's just this wholesome dude who wants everyone to be happy and to get along. Like, he doesn't come to this world being like, I'm gonna fuck this shit up. Like, no. He's just like, can we just all get along and, you know, be happy together? That would be nice. So.
Yeah, it's interesting when he stares down, like, guys who are, like, tough looking. He's like, well, why don't we do this? And the guy goes, well, what about this? And he's like, well, we could. He goes, okay. All right, and they're the best friends.
Yeah. So I very much enjoyed it. You seem to be upset with how it structured itself, but...
I mean, I like it a lot. I think I'd watch a second season because, again, I'm just sort of sitting here like... I feel like the sun or the god from Monty Python. We're like, get on with it! And I just need to see what happens next. It's not terrible. It's just... I kind of was hoping for just a little bit more depth and a little bit more answers to the intrigue that we're getting. A little bit more of the intrigue of a direction, because it seems like they're kind of hinting at something, but I don't really know what they're doing, because the demon lords in here seem like they're on this like other mentality of not really good or evil.
They're like chaotic neutral, it feels like. They're not like, it doesn't seem like the demon lords are like looking to dictate or rule the world. It doesn't even seem like they're necessarily look out to get Rimuru at all. Like, they're just sort of like, they take a benign interest in him. And like, they seem to, they are dangerous. They are a threat if they choose to be, but they're not the sort of stock standard evil antagonists who rule the world and are like an inevitable conflict. So.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, and you know what, if they do like a thing where each demon lord is a different version of like a chaotic neutral character, that could be interesting. I'd be down for that if done right. Because he's got the weird girl who's like super like neutral, who's like his best friend now or something. And then you've got like, you know, the hand wringing guy, but ultimately he's just here to test things. It's like, so I could be down if they end up just doing a bunch of like you know, these are guys who just want to be catalysts. Yep.
Would you watch another season?
So,
cool.
I would definitely watch another season. Just because I do enjoy the world, however slowly they seem to be dripping the details of the world in. It's enough that, like, I enjoy the wholesomeness of it. It's nice to sort of get that good feeling. I enjoy how they handle the OP protagonist. I like this a little bit better. You still get those moments of, oh man, they don't know how powerful this guy is. Oh, it's gonna come, and then like he one shot
and then and yeah, like, oh, instant nut.
He did it. But like it, they still have that. It's and which is fine, but they don't do it like often enough, so that way it doesn't outstay its welcome. And when they do it, it's because really he had no choice, and they kind of backed him into a wall because he does seem to genuinely, and this is important, genuinely not want to fight because he is trying to make this like peaceful world and its little utopia place for monsters and stuff. And I think it's hard to kind of do that with certain characters because, or rather, it's hard to show that in anime. A lot of characters will say that that's what they do, but it feels very more genuine because Rimuru has now shown us multiple times that. So I do enjoy that a lot, and I would enjoy the second season.
Okay. So Run with the Wind?
Yeah.
I watched two episodes, so I have. I know, but at least I watched something, so.
Okay, yeah. All right, well, what do you think of the two episodes? Because I remember those pretty darn well.
Really strong animation. I liked the. I enjoyed the characters. The only reason I didn't watch more is I think I got distracted by something else, not because Run with the Wind was bad or anything. I do need to watch it. Everyone has told me it's really great, and it like strikes a chord with me because I am a runner. So, but I
strike more chords with you.
I could not
stop thinking about you on cross country.
I like the passion of the one main guy that he recruits the other dude. It seemed like I've known people like that who are just so into it and everything. Like it's the guy who recruits all the other people unknowingly. it's a relatable sort of feeling, and I've, you know, could see it in some of my friends. So it's something I definitely want to watch more of. I just didn't get around to it, but I was pleasantly surprised by like the animation quality of just, you know, they took a lot of time with something that they probably could have very easily skimped on. They, you know, the character animations are pretty fluid and everything for something that isn't like a shonen action, whatever kind of show. So yeah, I enjoyed the first two for sure. I think it's definitely something that mainstream audiences probably would give a pass to, but because I'm so, you know, have such a history with running, just as you do, like it's something I'm sure that sort of instantly caught our attention, but I definitely want to continue watching it. So sell me on the rest of the season, Richard.
Yeah, so, so first off, I just want to say it's probably one of the most like underrated soundtracks I've ever heard in the show. Because it gets so crazy in the races, and they have so many good like melodies and stuff going through it that it really like it gets you jazzed up, man. It gets you really cool. Like there are moments where I'm like, I'm sitting there, I'm watching, I go, 5K coming up soon. I'll just like sign up for it. I don't want to give spoilers. I'm going to be talking extremely vague right now. The last race is one of the most exciting because, well, like for anyone who has not run or done any kind of like track or field sort of things in school, one of the most exciting things is the relay. And it's exciting because it's the only time in running that you actually feel like you're not genuinely on a team. And so you have this like mentality of not only do I need to do well, but I need to do well so that I give the next leg a good position in the race. And there's a lot more hanging in there than just the normal, like, I'm going to run to see how fast I can run. And so the last, like, I think it's like a two-part finale or two-part episode things, because it's a long-ass race that they're doing. All the legs, it's so good how, like, they have, like, by the end of the show, all these characters are now committed to running, and they all have gone through like their reasoning. Basically, the main guy, and I cannot remember his name right now because it's been so long since I watched this show, but like he has to kind of get them not only to run, but convince them that it's a good idea for them and their life goals and stuff. So, like, one guy, he's constantly looking for job interviews, and he basically convinced him that this would look good on your resume. And sure enough, in the interview, it's actually working. People are actually getting, like, oh, you're doing that race? Oh, man, that's impressive. And so, like, he actually starts to come around to it and stuff. So during the race, they're all going through, like, how they got here. And it's not, like, a recap episode feel. It's them all, like, you get actually more adding into stuff. And it's so good of, like, of how, why they're committed and why they're pushing as hard as they're pushing and stuff. It's really good. It's something that, especially with runners, you kind of will be able to connect with. But with people who just have, like, who wish that they could have a goal or want to have a goal or even have a goal for something, it's another sort of a moment of, like, man, these guys are accomplishing something, like, really cool together. So, yeah, it's a fun anime. And I think the animation sells it home, too, because, you know, it's just running. But anime will always, like, you know, hype it up.
Oh, yeah, like, make it look cooler than it actually is. But
and I think the best part, though, is that they do the tunnel vision.
Yes. Really
well, which, like, if you've ever run before, you hit that point.
Where that's, like, yeah, when you're, like, probably...
And you're not sure, am I really focused or am I about to pass out?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's usually when you're within, like, a mile of passing out.
Yep. So I think they do that really well because even though I don't think they go toward the passing out thing, but they do have this kind of, like, honed-in focus moment of just, like, the main – one of the main characters and stuff where, like, you know, all the sounds and surrounds just, like, fade out and it's just him running and he's just, like – and you can hear, like, the footsteps hitting the ground and stuff. And it's all just quiet. It just hears that kind of thing. And it's really cool to sort of see that because runners especially know how to kind of, like, turn their mind off almost. And, like, it's just the run. It's really cool. So, yeah, I recommend finishing that show for sure. Especially you, Ian, because of the knee. Like, one of the characters has, like, this really bad
knee. Hey, I'm not sure how it's gonna relatable.
But, like, it's so cool. It's so cool, though, because it's literally, like, the same thing with you, and this character doesn't make a big deal out of it. Like, it's just always in the background, and so, like, as these races are getting closer, I'm watching this, and I start wondering, like, okay, wait a second, like, no one's addressed this yet in a while. I'm starting to feel a little bad about this, and it's just so cool how they handle it. So, yeah, Run with the Wind, really solid all-around anime that unfortunately came out in the fall when a lot of other really solid anime came out.
Yeah.
So, but in terms of the winter finishing it up, man, that was a good one to keep watching, to keep up with. So,
good studio, good everything. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to continue to – that's something that especially depending – I don't know. I haven't sunk my teeth into everything that there is to watch in the summer season, but if it ends up being a shallow season again, I'll definitely keep watching that. So, yep.
Yeah, summer can go both ways a lot of times. So, but – yeah, and it actually ends. I should clarify that, like, the last episode feels like if there is a season two out there somewhere, then awesome or whatnot, but, like, you don't need one. It feels like a good conclusion, and I enjoy, like, you know, I don't need to keep a long-running show. It felt like it was focused on its goal, and it got there. So, yeah, that's Run with the Wind.
Okay. So 38 minutes in, all of the SAO fanboys who are out trolling the internet looking for people who criticize or praise their show so that they can alternatively kill and or lavish wet, sloppy kisses on them. Here we are.
Yeah. All right. So I'll just briefly, because there's been a lot of talk about Alicization already. Ooh, that might have been the closest I kind of came to make that word sound like a word. So it's very clear that it's having an Assassin's Creed problem. Like, SAO is having a problem where the real world is extremely uninteresting to what is going on in the online world. And so in the beginning of the show, it very clearly they try to get Kirito into the online world as fast as possible because it's kind of a forced feeling of him just getting stabbed and the poison is hurting him too bad, so we gotta put him into this, like, animus thing, and they don't call it the animus, but I've played Assassin's Creed and I know what an animus is when I see one, so that's essentially what it is. But then what they do is they actually escalate SAO better than how they had done it in season 2, where season two, they just had it. It felt like he read the book Ready Player One, and he thought that was a cool concept, and so he tried to do the same sort of like somebody's killing the gamers, and it's got a magic bullet thing, and he's doing, and it just never felt like a real, like it just never felt real. It was just kind of a shallow copy of that book. I did not check the dates, so I don't know. I'm sure there's someone out there be like, well, actually, pushes glasses up anime style. The manga of Sword Art Online, or the light novel, came out well before Ready Player One, so you're incorrect. Ready Player One copied it. Well, then Ready Player One did a better job at it, so that's what I'm just going to say. So this one has like a dream scenario. It's what it goes into, where it starts locking into like the alternate world feels super real because you're kind of born into it, literally, and you're raised into it, and everything happens in there much quicker because it's a dream. You know, we've all seen Inception. So everything happens quicker than in the real world, so you're quickly raised up, but you go through it, according to you, at least, that you've been with these people. So they don't feel like NPCs anymore. It's a very nice way to sort of make a more real feel to this virtual reality. So the story in it is actually the better part. It feels very, I don't want to say Tolkien because that's going to devalue Lord of the Rings, but it does have this more high fantasy feel to it, and I like that feeling a lot more. Kirito is still Kirito. He does extremely well the first time at everything, but like it, you have a better side character now who actually feels like he's contributing, and you actually get to see his arc through the story. Alice eventually ends up becoming a person, and you get to see her arc, which is basically Saber 2019 version.
Yeah, I was about to say, you're going to have to be more specific.
Yeah, like, I think Mother's Basement actually said this, where he was talking about it, and he says, to be fair, though, when he wrote Alicization, it was back when, like, Fate's Day Night had just kind of been released and was starting to pick up waves as, like, the visual novel, or the visual novel. So it's not that Alice is a copy of Saber. She's the first copy of Saber. So like in terms of like she's the original copy. So yeah, I could see where that is. In fact, a lot of the girls, there's like a lot of cute anime girls in there, or at least Alice's family. And they all sort of feel like, I'm like, oh, there's Saber. There's small Saber. There's this other older Saber. I'm like, oh, all Sabers at a certain point. So, it's, I mean, you know, whatever. Saber's a cool character, so I guess I'll allow it.
Why is Alice naked? Why is that a thing?
Is she naked? What do you mean?
I don't know. I thought that, like, because I've seen clips and stuff of, like, the final couple episodes. Oh. She looks naked. Okay. Is she naked?
Okay. Good news. Good news. That's not Alice.
Okay, who? Yeah. I don't know. I just assume.
The main ruler of this AI world. Like,
why is she naked, Richard?
No idea. Because she's so powerful that anyone who tries anything can get killed. I guess.
So, yeah. I love that we live in a world where this is progressive for SAO.
While Sword Art Online, you know, changes some things, will stay the same. It's still Sword Art Online. Let's not kid ourselves around that there are going to be moments of, well, that was a poor design choice. And yeah, that was probably one of them.
Were there any disturbing rape scenes in this season of SAO?
Yes.
What? Again?
I know. So this, okay, and it actually, like, part of me says, this was better and also worse than the other ones, because it's better in the sense that it actually tries to dive into the situation rather than dance around a bush and just allude to it.
Other ones, plural. Yeah. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
I know. It's worse because it handles it in the most like Saturday morning cartoon villainry that I've ever seen.
Wait, let's pause on that statement right now. I want you to remember that the second SAO rape scene involved a person cackle. Wait. Both of them involved a villain cackling maniacally, screaming like with their eyes bugging out of their heads while they did the malicious act. You're telling me that this one was worse than that?
Yes.
What?
We still have bug eyes. We still have cackling. We got lip licking. That's always a fun one.
Oh, yeah. That's a staple.
The best part, though, is when... Okay, so let me set up the scenario for you briefly. It's a bunch of nobles who think that they have the idea, like, you can't touch these guys. They're supposed to be above the, like, you know, the law is them. Everyone's supposed to, you can't really disagree with them.
Because so we have a college lacrosse player situation here. Basically. Okay, gotcha.
And I kind of wish they actually did more with that. The problem is that this show has this, like, taboo system where it says a whole lot of acts aren't allowed, killing being one of them, or violence. And so, like, somehow...
Wait. So rape is allowed.
That's exactly what I was going to get to my point. Is like, this scenario is completely undermined because of the fact that a taboo index that somehow neglected this is allowing it. And it's just sort of saying, no, it's fine. According to the taboo, you can do it, but you can't stop it. So, yeah, don't you...
Because if somebody tries to be violent in order to stop the rape, that would not be allowed by the taboo system. What the fuck?
I know, and that's exactly what happens, and
So cringy.
It's so cringy. It's so SAO, too, because it's one of those things where I'm like, it looked like you went into this with an idea to make a statement about rape and class privilege, and you came out with like a Saturday morning cartoon goofiness and somehow made everything worse.
How many times does SAO have to have an ill-conceived rape scene before they just decide to not do that anymore?
I don't know. And I just, like, at least this one was more cathartic because, at a certain point, Kirito has enough and so does the guy... So Kirito obviously isn't going to be as controlled by the taboo system. This is something that literally stops people from, like, doing resistance to certain decrees from the higher order. So the other guy finally, like, breaks free of that, and it's a very nice character arc progression. It's just like, man, I really, really wish you guys had, like, framed this better because, like, there are other ways to make him probably break this system that doesn't, you know...
Yeah, that doesn't...
Rape seems so black and white.
This
and
is such, weird. Like, a juvenile, like, it's like clear, ninth, like, ninth grade creative writing thing to do. Like,
yes.
Ugh.
It's very clear that this guy, the author, either has never raped someone like this, thank God, or has, like seen forums of like the worst stories and assume that that's the norm for how rape is done.
Yeah, this is both incredibly, it's both incredibly naive as well as a little disturbing because after like one time, fine, two, okay, three, it's like you seem to have a taste for this.
Yes, that's the other issue is that now that's the third time. Like if this was the first time, I'd be like, this isn't great. But I'm glad we're past this now and we're done. The problem is that, like, we've now had two other ones that were not great. And this one is just, like, the only reason why I say this one is quote-unquote better is because it's very clear what the intent is. There's no, like, trying to argue that these two noble people are good people. There's no wiggle room to say that this is bad. Now, that being said, that's also the problem with it is the fact that a lot of rapes and sexual assaults out there, the wiggle room is all over the place and it's super confusing and congested. And you don't know what, like even the person who's being raped is like, I don't know. I think I made it clear. Am I the bad person in this? And so it's like this weird victim blaming going on. This one, there's not that. It's just like this weird, like as if all rape, you can easily identify this like bad guy, and the bad guy is going to look like this.
Well, it's rape handled in a Saturday morning cartoon way, which is not how it is usually in real life. Like,
it's going to be a person you know. It's not going to be a guy who has proven to be an antagonist during this entire show.
Right, like, and the one during the second part of season one of SAO was, for me, I felt particularly striking in that way because the would-be rapist was, like, literally his eyes were popping out of his head and he was, like screaming the girl's name over and over again like a crazed lunatic. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, you know, this is This is like a hentai. Like, you know, this is fetishizing this. Like, it's the
setup for one, certainly.
Yeah, this seems fetishizing, which is not okay. So, yeah. Anyway, I think we spent more time on that than we probably should have.
Hang on. I just have one thing for you to see, and I want you to look at our Discord, because this is how they up the ante of the bug eye.
Wow, that's just meme-worthy all on its own.
Yeah.
Did he seriously swan dive into the bed?
The girl's tied up in weird, like, sexy ribbon things, and he throws off his shirt and swan dives toward them. And, yeah.
That would be funny if it wasn't so disturbing.
That's the thing. I think that's how you can sum up that scene. This would be funny if it wasn't so disturbing. So, yeah, but honestly, okay, ignoring that scene, because it just seemed like they unnecessarily put it in order to get them to progress the plots in a certain direction or character arc. There is a lot to like about this show. It's like the pacing felt way better than the other SAO shows. The side characters, again, actually felt like people I cared about. And even though Kirito was like, you know, naturally good at everything, it didn't feel like he was immediately the best in the room. Like, I did feel like there were moments where he struggled, and it was nice to finally see struggle moments with this kid. So, I don't know. It's a step in the right direction in certain areas, it's a step back in other areas. but, like, I think if this is how SAO goes, like, I like this online world better, and it does leave a cliffhanger, so eventually I think the second season comes in fall, I want to say, maybe winter, I don't know, somewhere in that range, but like, if this is the direction it goes, then I'm more intrigued than I was before. But Ian, let's talk about a good SAO.
Yeah, I mean, real quick, because it didn't come out this season, but like, I watched Gun Gale, SAO Alternative, whatever, that's in some order. Those words are in a different order. Anyway, it was really good, I thought. I mean,
did you finish it?
I did finish it, yes. Really quick, yeah, I mean, it was definitely the best of any of the SAOs, in my opinion. It addressed very human elements of escapism and why people would play a VR MMO in a realistic and relatable way. Addressed body image issues, addressed like social, like problems making friends and stuff, and like being social, and like how that translates to, you know, motivations for the characters. It addressed, in a very weird way, mental health and suicide and even, I don't know, like a sort of mental illness in the context of self-destructive behavior, which
that's probably the best way to phrase that.
Yeah, which it was interesting because it was very odd at first, but once you sort of, I don't know, you couldn't not like it because they framed the characters as not thinking, like, if the main character had like taken a step and just thought like, well, this chick's weird, fucker, then like it would have been that would have been it. But because she's like such a good natured person and she wanted to like genuinely help this person, it kind of makes it okay. So it was, I felt, a really interesting human story, and it wasn't like the god complex power tripping sort of escapist isekai that we've come to expect from SAO. The only thing I didn't like was occasionally I found the female voices of the two main leads to be a little annoying, but I get that they were trying to sort of poke a little bit of fun at like the loli sort of thing by like saying like, hey, like here's two anime lollies, but they're not really, but they're doing it because of this expectation that that's what's attractive, and like that, and the high-pitched voices kind of comes part and parcel with that. So I get it and I forgive it, but it was occasionally a little irritating when she got particularly high-pitched, where I was like, you know, you're gonna break the glass on my TV stand if you squeal any louder. But yeah, that's my like 30 seconds of, I'd watch another season if it ever happened. I don't think it will, but like if they ever did another season, I'd watch it. I also really liked the it's a weird thing, but I really liked the closing OP or whatever. I liked the arts, like the sort of the pictures of the main character and like the, like where it was like cut in two, where like the bottom half was like her avatar and then the top half was her and then it switched it to, and like, I really enjoyed that. I thought it was cute.
It was so. a clever and simple way to show what the whole show is basically about, if you were to boil it down.
Yeah, and then her making the friendships with that other team of like all the like scary girls who ended up being just these little chibi girls, which I thought was cute. So yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah, I enjoyed the idea of just not everyone online is what they look like online. So everyone has their inner persona that they wish that they could put into the real world, but you know, for reasons that might be different, but are probably different for everyone, they just can't. And so in the game, they can be kind of a little bit more true to themselves. And without as much repercussions. And I think that that's interesting. It tickled it a little bit. It didn't go 100% in on that, but it did kind of like say more on it than what SAO has ever done before. And yeah, I enjoy the main character. I would love a second season because I think that this one actually, there was arcs all around. Everyone had an arc. It was just nice to see progression in an SAO and to show that, you know what, this, like, the world that this guy's built actually could be useful. It's not, the show is not bad. It just hasn't been handled very well so far. So, yeah, I recommend it for anyone who is mad at SAO, but, you know, wants to be proven wrong.
Yep.
Somehow the spinoff is the better product, for sure.
So we want to hit the rest of these? Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to skip Boogie Pop and the others, here's my 15 seconds. It's really good. The disjointedness is unnecessary at times. I think that they should have just gone straight through, but I enjoyed it. It's got one of the best atmospheres I think I could have asked for in terms of pacing and everything, and the world that they kind of build up. And I think the soundtrack is top notch. All right, moving on. Oh, and it looks great. It's really animated really well. So that's another thing. So moving on. Do you want to talk Rising of the Shield Hero?
Jesus. All right. Yeah, I'll try not to be long-winded on this because I know we have a lot of other stuff to go through. But
I noticed that we talked quite a bit on continued shows, but yeah.
Jesus. You want to go first or you want me to go first?
I'll go first. So I wanted to love this show a lot, and it's weird to say that because when I first watched it, I didn't think I was going to like it, and so I didn't think I was going to keep up with it. But, man, there were times where this show just felt like it did not know where it wanted to go. And I felt like there was episodes that wasted my time and its show's time. Because, like, plot-wise, it did not hustle enough for what the plots were kind of talking about. That it kept, it was like Pokemon, where Ash just all of a sudden goes to a town that's not on the map, according to any of our Pokemon adventures, and then just dicks around for like no reason. And that's what it felt like a lot of times. We had like the weird chocobo race thing where I don't know what the point of that race was except to prove that his chicken thing is faster than raptors. But like then you had the entire like chicken queen, the filial queen or whatever, and that arc felt so weird and forced. It was basically like, I see that you guys are going to a very logical place to avoid any more discourse with this country. I'm going to turn you around and push you back this direction, which makes me feel like the entire path to getting to the outside country was also wasted. And it felt like a lot of the, like all it was basically like bestowing the queenship onto the next Philo, which is his, of course, Philo. And that felt unearned. It just felt like they kind of had a short fight and which she showed powers that she had yet to show us in the show beforehand. I'm saying the word show a lot. And suddenly she gets an extra ho guy or whatever the hair.
Yep. It's like, congratulations, you have earned this achievement, which doesn't really functionally do anything, but it sounds like a good thing.
Yeah. And I just, like, there are parts in it where, like, I think the strongest of the show was definitely his relationship with Raphtalia, which, according to what I've heard, was not accidental. The light novel does not focus as much on just those two. It kind of like cast a wider range of it all. And I heard that the show decided that they think that it's basically these two, and we're going to focus a little bit more in on it. And I enjoyed that. I think that was the right choice. My only problem was that as a result, a lot of the other characters felt very shallow or stereotypical, and they didn't really have a lot, like whatever connection they had to the main character, none of it really felt earned. Like, yes, he saved the princess, but did she need to join his party? It didn't seem like he needed another Lolly following him around and falling in love with him. Like, yes, he hatched this chicken out, but like, it just seems like, you know, defaultly she's going to be attracted as a mother or father basis, not like literally wanting to mate with the guy. It was weird. In fact, the weirdest thing, and it's so weird to say this, but the girl at, did you finish the show?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So the girl at the end that gets added to their party, literally in the last episode, felt more earned than any of the other girls that got added after Reptalia. Not by a lot. Like, her reasoning of being kicked out of the other party was very transparent of just like, oh, we're just going to throw this.
Well, at least reason it feels that way is because at least she was asked if she wanted to join the party. Yes. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I bought you from a slaver, and therefore you are now in my party.
Yeah, like that. And not only that, but like, she already had attributed, like, she worked well. I mean, like, I'm not saying team building cohesion, because we didn't get to see that kind of thing, but she already was a major help in the final fight. That, like, it felt like, okay, natural progression, that she would just naturally.
Right. There was that stereotypical, like, so this would, the way I think that this would play, and it's going to be a really weird comparison, is like Pokemon, where a lot of times there'd be an episode where this Pokemon or this person would like be forced into a situation where they'd have to work together with Ash and his party. And then at the end of the episode, like, do you want to join our party? And they'd join the party. But like, for literally half of these party members now, the only prerequisite for them joining the party is being purchased from a slaver. And then it's like, you are now in the party. Yay.
Yeah, like, I think Reptalia is an interesting one because she's obviously the first. But, like, what is interesting is that while she is purchased, there is a nice development of why she stays in the party.
Right.
But that's at least shown. Because, like, the princess being sent in mine, it just feels like it should have been temporary of a thing. Like, once he hands her over to her parents, that should be the end of it. But they just kept pushing her back in for reasons. And I never could really believe that, like, she would continuously keep going along with this. Like, I understand, like, yes, she would be friends with them. But it seems like, plot-wise, isn't she needed elsewhere? Like, don't they need her in other places? That was my issue with it. I was like, that just seems like you guys are really forcing her to be in it because she gets along with the chicken girl.
So can we address really quick, and I don't want to go too long on this, can we address the animation quality?
Oh my God, it was inconsistent.
Not just inconsistent. There were episodes where it was just like whole swaths of episodes where I thought that it was really, really unequivocally bad.
I am someone who does not sit and pay attention to animation very often in shows. Like, as long as you keep it consistent, I'm not going to be able to tell you if it was bad or not. I didn't even notice in Grimgar, there's a scene where Yume is just sort of like bouncing behind them, but not moving at all. Like, that was just how they made the, they tricked you into seeing it. But if I am noticing how bad this show got in animation quality, you've somehow done something really wrong.
Yeah.
And I remember a scene, it was in one of the later episodes, he was like racing the cart through the town, and all of a sudden I looked at the wheels, I was like, oh God, that does not look great. Those don't look the same. Like, everything just looks, like, it just looks so janky and bad.
Yeah, and like, I did not like the use of the CGI, you know, the CGI monsters and stuff, which hardly ever look good. Yeah. CGI T-Rex, but like, not just like, even setting that aside, there were like at least 3 episodes in the middle of the show where they would have like these 30-second montages where it would be a still shot of them like doing something like cooking or doing something like, you know, eating together and laughing. And it would be a still shot, no action, slowly panning across the screen while music played in the background. And that would, and it would transition to the next still shot. And they do that for like 30 seconds or more. Yeah. I'm like, you are in like in multiple episodes. I'm like, Jesus, how rushed was your production schedule that you couldn't even fucking bother to animate an entire section of your fucking show?
Like, there was times where it was like solid 2 to 3 minutes of nothing but just still shots. Like, they just took pictures, still framed photos. They look nice, but we're watching an anime to see animation.
Yeah, and then
they just sort of panned through them, and that was it. That was all they did for about a solid 2 to 3 minutes on each show. After about the halfway point, it became like a regular.
Yeah, and the fight scenes, I would say, for the most part, were remarkably static. And I really didn't like them. Like, it would mostly involve the shield hero taking up a stationary position, the enemy taking up a stationary position, and them launching attacks at each other, occasionally running up. And it, you know what it felt like? Is it felt a lot like a JRPG, like your Final Fantasies, where like they would run up and attack, then drop back to their spot. And then the other person would run up and attack and drop back to their spot. There was very little in the way of fluid animation. The choreography was very stock standard, basic, even insultingly bad occasionally. Like
for the shield hero to stay stationary, that seems about right. I would expect him to not move a lot because he's trying to guard other than like quickly getting in front of someone. I don't expect him to move a lot. But there is no excuse for the other people to act that way.
Yeah.
People who have nothing but like cloth armor and stuff not to be moving around. It just, yeah, it was, if after the first couple of times, it becomes extremely transparent that they like somehow their budget got slashed.
Or not even that. I don't think there was enough talent. Like, they just didn't know how to properly animate the fights. Cause like, and also, like, if you think about it, and I have a lot of problems with the whole Pope thing and the fight that happened there and just what led up to it, but not the least, the whole thing with the Pope of the Three Heroes Church. That fight scene was insulting because what freaking people would decide, oh, we are in this crater now at a height disadvantage and essentially a kill box for this dude. Like, maybe we should get out of this crater. If you want to keep the shield hero down there, fine, like lack of mobility, whatever. You're telling me that the bow hero can't dance up the side?
They went into the crater. They didn't even, like, start in there.
It makes no sense. It made no sense. I was like, oh, this is insultingly bad. Like, insultingly bad. And, like, so, but anyway, I want to make sure I wasn't the only one that thought that. I felt that the animation for something that's supposed to be like an action series was probably across the board the worst animation I've seen for an action series in a while.
You know what's interesting? Because we haven't gotten to spring yet, but like One Punch Man season 2 was better. Has been better animated.
Yes, than this yes, show's fights have been. It was. But yeah, and then also like I don't want to spend the whole episode talking about Shield Hero. I felt that the writing was occasionally very bad. Like,
yes,
and like it felt like a poorly scripted D&D campaign because the. So, like, the whole thing with the Three Heroes Church, like, the Pope just randomly shows up, decides he's going to kill all the cardinal heroes, and then, like, it was a very random escalation of that storyline, which had just been alluded to before, and then all of a sudden, just as quickly, it was gone because the Pope was defeated. Like, there was no buildup for that story. The climax was entirely independent of the shield hero's actions. It was just, oh, Pope guy shows up and tries to kill the shield hero and fails. Like, then, like, the whole thing.
All the intrigue they've been.
There was no intrigue, because they had the other heroes showing up to the church to do research, and then all of a sudden it's just like, oh, they're dead. Oh, wait, they're not. I'm like, what?
If they had been really dead, I was going to get so annoyed. Because I have a big problem with killing any character off screen, especially if it's a major character. You don't do that.
But then they whiplashed it.
In the real world, but like in the stories, we need to know things.
But I don't. But it doesn't make any sense for them to, as writers, they were like, oh yeah, they're dead. And then they show up, it's like, no, they're not dead. I'm like, What the only purpose for you writing it that way was just to try to dupe the audience, because it doesn't do anything for the Shield Hero's character for him to, in the span of 10 minutes standing in the same fucking spot, for him to think, okay, the heroes died, and then, oh wait, no, they didn't. He didn't have to discover that. He didn't have to make any decisions based on that. It was just something purely for the audience's perspective.
He barely had any kind of, like...
There was no agency.
Yeah, there was the only thing that accomplished was making the spear hero attack the shield hero yet again, which he already had been doing because they were convinced that he was kidnapping the girl, which was also a horrible plot they had.
I would say in the last
now they have TVs to show like the population a clip,
and then like using that. This is another thing, but like having that T-Rex monster chasing the shield hero and his party out of that town to go meet the Filolial Queen, like it reeked of the writers being like, well, we don't know how to get you from position A to position B in the story, so we'll just have a monster chase you there. And like this...
Yeah, but even that wasn't great because like the entire Filo Queen was useless. Like she defeats it. Like this was stuff like it felt... Every time the shield hero made a decision, it felt 100% unearned because he didn't reach it himself. It was somebody else basically like drop kicking him in the face with words to tell him you have to do this.
The only decision that he made in the second half of that show that held any sort of agency was his decision to try to spare what's her name? Sorry, her name is Bitch. Never mind. The king. They totally undermined it by having the queen saying afterwards, I was going to beg you to spare their lives, like rather than actually go through with killing them. Like, that was completely fucking unnecessary, except to try to make the queen appear more sympathetic and weak. And like,
yeah, because they dicked us around so long with never showing the queen that it felt like they were forcing like characterization onto her really fast because they realized that they don't have a lot of time with this character to let us know what kind of a mother is she.
And like, you know, it was a decision, but like it was the only decision he made with any sort of agency. But at the same time, it was entirely predictable because they're not going to just have him stand by while two characters get beheaded on screen in like what has ostensibly been so far a pretty toothless anime when it comes to violence. So like, you know, it was predictable, but it was like the only thing I can point to and say, yeah, that was a decision the shield hero made on his own. So
yeah, it also seems weird because and this has already been said by YouTubers everywhere, but like she gets this like chance to not be killed. Yes, she gets a horrible like insult to her name change or whatever, but like why does she think it's a good idea to try to poison the shield hero who spared her life?
Yeah, like, it makes no sense.
What angle does she get from this other than the fact of, well, we just found out you killed the shield hero, and she's like, no, that's not true. It's like, oh yeah, are you lying? And then all of a sudden she gets an electric shock, and it's just like, well, guess what? Now that he's dead, we're going to kill you too.
What was the purpose of that other than to just establish that she's still a shitty person?
Yeah.
Like, that was it. Like, it didn't make any sense.
I think maybe Raftalia you could argue for, but even there, it's going to be hard. But, like, no one seemed to have earned any character growth in this show. Like, it just never felt like anyone kind of...
Well, I don't even know that Raftalia, like, every step forward as far as, like, you know, like, being... Finding per. She's confident and she found something that gave her purpose after her parents died, but now she's hopelessly dependent on Naofumi in the sense that, like, if he leaves, she'll probably suicide off that cliff. Oh, like,
yeah, that's
so it's like, congratulations, you've boomeranged it too far the other direction.
Yeah. He's got to be a little bit more of a jerk to her so she can be a little bit more normal. I cannot remember the girl's name. It's not mine. That's the princess. But
Milk?
I think her name is like Maine or something too. But like,
are you talking about
the red-haired girl, Bitch?
Oh, it's mine. I thought it was mine.
Is it mine?
Yeah.
No, I thought that was the princess's name.
The princess is Melty.
Melty, you're right. Okay, yeah, it is mine. All right, so Like, mine, it never, like, this was a moment where I thought mine and the Spear Hero would dramatically have a change. Like, they see, like, things happen a little bit. Not the execution. I would have thought that they would have had this at the fucking Pope fight. When, like, Naofumi, like, saves her ass three times over with this, like deus machina for the enemy moment. But, like, it's so weird that the show refuses to have people have any kind of a change. And they don't have an explanation for, like, it's not like a Julius Caesar thing where he's like, no, you know, I gotta go to the Senate office. That's my duty and everything's telling me I have to. And it's just this tragic moment of we can't change. No, it's just that they're being stupid and they're not able to, like, show any actual growth like a normal person.
Yep.
So it was bothering me so much through this. Alright, you want to talk about a different show?
Yeah, can we move on? Like, it's yeah, we got so wanna, much.
Talk to me about Promised Neverland.
Promised Neverland.
I have two more episode. I think I got to episode 4.
Jeez, you really do not like this show.
I have to say, I don't hate it as much as some of the stuff I hated about, like, the rape scene in Sword Art Online or the shortcomings of the whimper of how Rising of the Shield Hero ends. But, yeah, it's just not. Man, there's something about this show that just doesn't click with me. But you tell me. Maybe you can change my mind.
I mean, I really enjoyed Promised Neverland. I felt that it was a well-done intrigue suspense show with a lot of mind games, a lot of twists that were not that I did not predict, especially later on. The main characters were very likable, which is pretty hard to pull off since they're kids, but they don't treat them like the typical show treats children. They treat them as very smart, that they treat them as mature beyond their years. They make decisions that I would see myself making. The impending danger is always there, which is good for, like, a mystery thriller. But also it's doesn't shy away from violence. It doesn't shy away from, like, gore and whatnot that makes their situation even seem even more helpless and grave. And it's well-structured. You're rooting for the characters. The art style was good. The animation was good. They'd make very good use of camera angles and forced perspectives. Occasionally, like, playing up the claustrophobia of the house that they're in. And especially when they switch to, like, a first person perspective in some situations, it really plays up on the tension. It's kind of like a pretty useful trope when it comes to horror movies. It was really good. I really liked how it ended. It's left itself open to another season, but at the same time, if it concluded there, I wouldn't hate it. So I think there is going to be another season because this is a shonen manga that's ongoing. So I'm pretty sure that they are going to do another season. I think it's already been confirmed for one. So it leaves open. There's a lot of table setting it does as far as the world. They could set it up for some interesting storylines in the future. And they certainly drop a couple things through the season that leaves a couple threads dangling where you think that there's something more going on, but it doesn't. It sort of just teases it. But it's a good self-contained arc that I really enjoyed. So, yeah, I think you should try and give it a go for a few more episodes. Initially, I was very wary of it because I'm like, I don't like kids. I don't think that I'm going to enjoy watching these kids. But as it goes on, I'm like, I really like these kids. Like, it's kind of like the Stranger Things thing, but different. Because in Stranger Things, it was just because the dialogue was clever and, like, you could relate to the kids because it was kind of like how my childhood was. But in this, it's not necessarily because they're relatable. It's because they're smart. And what you hate more than anything else is a dumb kid.
It's because that's the normal. We're not here to watch a show be, like, normal. We're here to see people do things a little differently than
us. Yeah. These kids are very, very, very smart. So watching them be smart is fun. So, yep, that's my review of Promised Neverland. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, cool. My issues with it had been sort of this weird anxiety whenever I watched it, where, like, because of the camera angles and because of, like, how they set the scenes up, it always looks like something's going to happen because they're not careful. they are very dumb with how they handle. Like they're smart, but they are talking about their plans in broad daylight in the middle of all these rooms, and I'm just having to think, like, how has no one just walked in on them? How has no one overheard them? Are the walls like titanium steel? Like, how does nobody hear these things? And they're just like, and the way the angles of the camera's going, yeah, you're right, it does feel like a horror thing. But like nothing happens. At least up to my episode 4. But like I'm sitting here like, oh my god. And that one, the newest sister that they got.
Oh yeah, I know who you're talking about. Connie or yeah, or, no, it's not Connie. That's the girl that got.
Oh yeah, yeah. Could the most predictable twist of this is that that this orphanage is not the sing-songy place that we all.
It's like, well, no shit, Sherlock. That's how we have an anime.
Like there are people online that were like, oh, what a twist! I never saw that coming. But you never saw that one coming. I was like, how? Oh man, I wish I could live in your world where like that kind of a thing would surprise me, because this would be such a treat then. But yeah, it's that sister's name.
I don't remember her name. But
that guy crazy. If there's ever someone of an enemy with a kill me sign on his back, that would be her. Because it just seems like she is obviously going to be the first blood at some point, and no one should feel bad about it because she's nuts.
She's nuts, but it's funny. They actually give her some characterization later on where they kind of explain where she came from and how she came to be like that. Good. Okay. And it does make her make more sense, if that makes sense. So
yeah, so that was the issue I had. And it was something like, now that I'm up to episode 4 and stuff, and like now I've gotten a little bit more on mom and the sister and stuff, because before it was all just the kids. And now I'm like, okay, you're building the world a little bit more now. I didn't, it was so in a box that I didn't know what I wanted from the show, because of the fact that, you know, everyone just seemed like they were, it was just this area. And there wasn't, in fact, it was so unknowable what was outside of this farm area that, who knows what's out there, and it didn't seem like they were ever going to address it. Now it felt like all of a sudden, like, okay, you guys, it's creepy, it's weird, but I'm digging it because you're kind of building it a little bit more. So maybe I will give it another go just to kind of see how it all wraps up.
All right, Kaguya, Love is War.
Yeah, did you watch any of
it? I've watched all of it.
Oh, thank God. Okay, so I didn't think I was gonna like this show. I thought that if there's one trope I've hated throughout anime, it's the like will they or won't they?
Oh, the slow burn romance.
The slow burn romance, because especially in anime, that's like seasonal, where it just goes, or not seasonal, but like they'll stretch it through the seasons, and it just will like just freaking like tell each other how you feel. Like
for the love of God, fuck already.
Yes, and that's why we loved Funny Girl Senpai so much, because they got it over with so quickly. Yep. And it was so good. It's refreshing. That's why I love Bakemonogatari. Same thing. They get it over with, and then they realize, oh, there's more to romance than relationship than just confessions. And so I was afraid that Kaguya was going to be so bad because it was two of those characters. But man, no, actually, it was really enjoyable. That was it's a funny anime.
Oh yeah, it's very funny. I thought it was, yeah, I thought it was hilarious. I thought that the characters were likable. I thought that it was well written and entertaining, and that what's her face, that girl with the pink hair, was just too wholesome for this world.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And like, yeah, the opening is like it's like a Bond movie opening. I thought that was really, yes, it was really good.
But like a goofy Bond, it was so good. I love that. I hope there's a second season, but man, I'm going to miss that opening if it's for the second, like for a different, if they replace it, like, because it's so good.
But it was really cute. It was wholesome and cute and fun and lighthearted and well-written and stuff. And it was, initially I was like, I don't think I'm going to like this, but then I was like, you know what? This is fun. So I had fun with it. It was fun.
Yeah. I think that the strongest point of the show was that, so while the relationship stays about where it had been in the beginning, what is very much different is Kaguya herself is very clearly early on. You start to learn that she is a recluse, rich girl, that she just hasn't got, like, her family has not allowed her to experience the real world. And side note, can I just say that her maid is also just fantastic? Like, that she is so done with it.
Yep.
Like, that's the
right. She was the unexpected MVP, I felt, in the second half of the season.
She's just like, for the love of God, just tell that you like him. And she's like, oh, I know. And she's like, all right, whatever, I'll be in my bath. She's just, that episode where all she kept trying to do was just get into a bath that she had, like, prepared for herself. It was her quiet time. And she was getting interrupted every
time. And Murakage, she was like, it was because she was, it was either about texts or phone numbers. It was about either.
Yeah, it was
text. Yeah.
She had just gotten a phone for the first time.
So.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because she didn't know how to get his, she didn't know how to get his phone number. So she had followed, she didn't know if she should follow him on
Twitter. Yes, that was it.
And because she was afraid that if she revealed that she sends a request, will it end up being that
like
telegraphs to him. And so when she's going back and forth to her maid asking her, like, you know, should I do this? And the maid ends up, like, I think she ends up suspending it on her own without her knowing because she was getting so sick of it. And the maid reveals, like, she's already friends with him. So is everyone else. That's no big deal. But she's making it such a big deal because, you know, when you're in love with somebody, you're afraid that you're telegraphing everything. So it was good. I enjoyed this show a lot for what it was. For how simple of a concept it was, I was very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on a little quicker. I'm just going to go quintessential quintuplets real quick. I didn't think I was going to like this show. I just jumped into it because the animation looked neat and it was red hair. And I was like, hey, yes, some things I enjoy in life. And ended up being a really wholesome harem. Also kind of funny at a lot of times, but a lot of heart-wrenching moments tear-jerking moments in it that I thought was really well done for a show that was essentially a harem. And I had no business being as good as it was. So it doesn't really end per se, but it does a How I Met Your Mother thing. And it starts off with, like, a wedding, and you're not sure who of the five he's getting married to because they all have red hair, and you're not sure which one's going to be the one he's marrying. But I like the idea that, like, when it starts out, I was like, okay, but it's going to be one of them. Awesome. I'm excited about this. And then, I don't think you mind me spoiling this, right?
No, you're good.
You see yourself. Yeah, at the end of this, they show a scene back at the wedding again, similar How I Met Your Mother fashion, and they show a closet with five wedding dresses. And I was like, that's it! God damn it! I don't know what your plan is here, but I want no part of it if this is where this show is going. So, almost happy, but overall, up until that point, literally, it was a really fantastic show, and there is a second season coming, I think, in the fall, but...
Oh, you have my condolences.
All right, Ian, talk to me about Mob Psycho, because I regretfully have not caught up to season two yet. I'm still working my way through season two.
Yeah, I would say Mob Psycho 100 was probably... I'd say it's in the conversation for me for best show of 2019 so far. It's another good example of a flat arc character in that Mob doesn't really change too much throughout the show, except that he's learning to make friends and become more social and accept his emotions, that his emotions are not something that he needs to bottle and be ashamed of, but that they make him who he is and that he doesn't have to be, like, scared of his psychic abilities. Like, so there's some development for him, but his values don't really change. Like, he's a good kid. He stays a good kid. He believes in – he's – at heart, it's a pacifist show. He doesn't believe in using his powers for violence. He doesn't believe that his powers –
Well, not against humans.
Right. And he doesn't believe that his powers make him inherently any better than anybody else in the same way. Like, he compares it in the same way to, like, well, you know, just like somebody who's smarter or somebody who, like, can lift a lot of weights or, like, speak another language, like, all those things, like, that doesn't make them any better than anyone else. It just makes them talented in that way. So he doesn't put himself on a pedestal. But he changes the minds and the perspectives of a lot of people around him in the same way a lot of flat arc characters should. And he changes their perspectives on the world and what may, especially other psychics, like other espers, he can brings around to his line of thinking. So by just being wholesome like he is. But of course, the real star of the show, besides Reagan, who is amazing, that's a character that in the first episode I didn't think I was going to like. But as the show goes, as the show goes on, he's probably one of the better written characters in anime. Period. He's really great and really shines like towards the end of season one and then into season two. He's just an amazing, wholesome character who genuinely has a soft spot for Mob and who's just incredibly hilarious, especially as the show goes on. So besides him being pretty much the star of the show, the biggest star of the show has to be the animation, which is absolutely freaking amazing. If One Punch Man flipped the script on what fight animation could be, Mob Psycho 100 is right up there. It's just the animation is just so crazy and abstract, but like really heavy and, you know, just A plus animation. If you love great animation in anime, it's a must watch. So, but it's a very wholesome show and there's a lot of feels and stuff. There's a couple episodes in season two where you're just like, oh man, my eyes are watering. Like it's really, really great. I can't recommend it hard enough. It was a great season of anime and yeah, definitely watch it.
Yeah, it seems really high quality. I think it's the same guy who did
One. I believe so. Yes.
I think it was Gigot maybe who was talking about it. But like the guy basically was just started like doodling these like really bad drawings, and like the comics that he made were like just got popular because of the content of them, and so. Like Mob, where like One Punch Man will like flip every once in a while to like. The derpy looking drawings that he did. That's the kind of animation that they will do, but it will also flip to like high end, like shonen, like crazy detail. Mob feels like it fully embraced the crappy drawings and like ran with it and has done so in such a way that it just feels so good to watch like the animation stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It all. So at least that's from as far as I've gotten so far in season
one. It's a distinct animation style, but it's so expressive and just so. It's hard to put into words, but it's unique, expressive, and just.
It has surprising depth for how.
Yeah, it's just beautiful. Really great. So.
All right. Well, I think that's all that we have for the winter anime. You ready for the significantly shorter?
Yes. So don't tune out because this one's going to be. The second half will be shorter than the first. So.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to actually tune out for this segment, as this file went way longer and way larger than I thought it was going to be. I want to apologize to everyone who had to listen to me. My audio quality was absolutely atrocious. My mic was failing dramatically. It was about $20 on Amazon. This isn't my real job, so there are corners that have to be cut in order to make this the bare minimum of mediocre level that we come to expect sometimes. However, I have in fact updated my mic. It just was way too late for when we did this podcast, so you get to hear, you know, the lovely mic now. However, you have to suffer through the mic's inability to process my naturally booming voice sometimes. So, anyway, it's embarrassing that the host is the one with the poor quality. You kind of forgive them when it's the person on the telephone calling in. However, for some reason, my mic has decided to just conk out. Again, it's what you get. I got a pretty good amount of mileage from a $20 mic, so I can't complain too much. So this one, still not super expensive, but much better than the one I had previously. Anyway, hope you all enjoyed the winter segment of the 2019 anime. I will be posting the spring segment right after this. You literally one, two, on to the website, so that way you guys don't miss a beat. So hopefully, if you did enjoy the first half of this, you will enjoy the second half of this. And stay to the end, because we do at least try to expand it out a little bit more. We really didn't like the spring as much as we liked the winter. But we did have some gems in there, and we also decided to, as I said, expand it out with both stuff from the summer that we've already started to watch that we've started to like, and also we talk about some of the shows that we kind of, that weren't in any of the seasons that we, you know, there are shows out there we just don't see because we're catching up on a lot of anime because, you know, we're all new to this world sometimes. So expect some of that in our opinions. So guys, thank you for bearing with us. It's still a work in progress for this podcasting thing, and we're going to hopefully get better as we get along. But for now, Mike has been improved, and we are going to go from here and keep doing what we're doing. So I will see you all in the next episode quite soon, actually. Thank you, and have a good night.